accession number 18259, reel 9.
Ernie Gallantry, reel 9.
Now then. Yes, some very clever lads in the camps, and with the tins that we used to get, they used to make different things out of them. For a start, you used to make a decent size tin for your mug, and they used to make a handle out of another tin, and the ways and means of fastening this handle on to the tin to make it presentable, you know. And they could even drill holes and make little rivets to go in to fasten them. And nearly everyone had a drinking mug made like that in his camps. And we also had, I had my own, a Dixie, as a matter of fact, that I, you know, one of the old, it's the old fashioned army Dixies, and a part of one of those that I used to get my food in. But we also get tins of Klim powdered milk. Klim was the name, K-L-I-M. And they were a reasonably sized tin, and once they had been, contents had been used, we used to use those, everyone used to use them for, most people did, for getting their soup and stuff in, you see, if there's nothing else. They came in, but what another thing we used to do was, I'll tell you about when we used to make the fires to brew our tea. We used to, initially, we used to make these little trenches and put some wood in, and when we used to get down and blow it to give it a draft, you know, blow it to get a flame to get your tea warmed up. Your water warmed. They made what we used to term as blowers. Now then, there was one of these, and it was in, I don't know if it still is, in the Army Transport Museum at Beverley. And they used to make these things out of these tins. These people were careful of doing this. And they got these Klim tins, which were pretty big. And they could make a fan out of the tins, some other tins, all by tapping with pieces of wood. You know. And they could make a fan, they had a spindle to go through, could fasten the ends up, and then it came through to one end with a handle on the end. And you could turn this thing so it made a draft, this fan. Just make a draft instead. And then they had another piece of tin used to come through from the opposite centre of the handle, which was the blower, and it used to blow the air through. See? And they were really, real good, well-made contraptions, you know. And it was surprising, everyone had them, but quite a lot of people had them, you know, for brewing your tea up, you see. We used to, you know, just put it down again to our little trough and then turn the handle, super used to get the wood going to make your tea. Because, as I say, that was one of our mainstays, was our cup of tea in the prison camps, you know. An Englishman would do anything for a cup of tea. But, yeah, they were really clever making things like that. And there was another camper I was in, Michael, this was one in Germany, and there was a chap in there, and he used to do the same. He used to make aeroplanes out of these tins, all the tins you used to get, and any other bits and pieces. Because it's surprising, bits and pieces that used to come in to get, you know, in the camps. Once you'd got working outside, and you could come back in again with bits and pieces, that's not anything sinister or anything like that, but they used to use them for making something or other. And this chap used to make aeroplanes. you know, real good size ones, and they were really authentic things, like Spitfires and that. And it, I always remember this particular camp. It was in Germany, actually. And we had this one, and it was a Stuka, Stuka dive bomber, and he had this fastened up on the ceiling on some string, and some red paper coming out from behind it, and another a British plane behind it, as if it shot it down. You know? And, I remember this one. He was the worst one I'd ever come across. Oh, he used to be mad when he used to see that. But that's the things he used to do. They could, you know, real. It all passed the time away, and very clever. Yeah, it's. I don't think there was much more about that camp. Oh, we started getting pay while through that camp, I remember. They started giving us little chits for money, so for how many lire it was for. And this was after the wood episode, when we'd stolen the wood. They started bringing brushwood in to the camp from outside. And we could buy them, you know, a bundle of brushwood. So we could buy a bundle for, I don't know, a few months or years, what. And that's how we used to brew our tea up legitimately then, without without any stolen wood, you know. And whilst I was there at that camp, we got moved then. Sometime this would be into going into 43, and it was a nice time. It was the summertime of 43, and. There's only a small party of us, I would think. I don't know. Maybe about 14, I would think, thereabouts. Doing the 14, this little party went, sent out to work. And it wasn't too far away from the camp, but I can remember about it. And it was to cultivate a disused, well, to get it ready for cultivating, a disused grape vineyard, you know. And it was a padaroni we went to work. I think a padaroni is the right, correct name for one of these here landowners or something, padaroni something. And it was his land, and we went along to tidy this up to get it ready for cultivating, to for growing grapes. And it was a proper little camp being set up specially for us to go into, prisoners. And there was a hut there that we was asleep in, and we had the barbed wire round, and a little hut for the man standing with his machine gun on it, you know, watchtower. But the guards who were with us then, they were really very, very good. They were, I don't suppose they couldn't have cared, you know, who would they were. They were, but it was one little bit. And there was only, what, I don't know, only about four of them and an officer. And they had their own little billet. And we used to go on the land during the daytime with our little hose, like a pickaxe with a flat front piece they had on for digging the land up. That's what we're doing, tilling all this land over to make it ready for cultivating, you see, make it into growing the grapes. And that's where I escaped from there, actually. I don't think how long we were there. No. But anyhow, we used to go out daily doing this work, and the guards were good, really. There was one, we called him Aldo. And he was a real comic, was this Aldo. And he could speak a little bit of broken English. And he was told that he used to come out with us. We only used to have one guard come out with us. You see. And he used to go out, and we used to get in place where, under this place where we're, you know, sorting out. And Aldo used to say, "Oh, piano, piano, sit down, sit down." he could sing. He used to sing. Proper tenor, you know. He was a real comedian. He'd been in the Merchant Navy at one time. And used to tell us about these coming in England, he says. And used to rattle the ports off he'd been to. Liverpool was one of the Liverpool, he used to say. That. And I go to England in big ship, he used to say. But he was funny, and he used to say, piano, sit down. And then he used to keep looking, and then he'd maybe see somebody coming along and say, hop, 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 get them. So we used to get working, you know. This Paderoni chap used to come round in a pony and trap, to see if everything was being worked all right. But this Aldo, he was a rum lad. And in fact, he pulled one of my teeth out, actually, at this camp. He had a little loose tooth on, and he pulled it out for me, did Aldo. And if he used to get eggs, you know, because then we used to start, if we got a little bit of, we used to do a bit of bartering then, you see, with these, anything we got from a Red Cross parcel, you see, if we had a bit of spare, well, it wasn't spare, but you used to barter it for bread, if you could get bread, you see, that was the mainstay, this, bread is the stuff of life. And if you could get more bread, well, you know, we're well away. And Aldo used to come along, and he'd be on his sentry, you know, around the camp. Well, it wasn't far to walk around, but he'd be in his sentry box, and he'd start, in the morning, he'd start going, cock-a-doodle-doo, duck, 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 chicken, chicken, chicken. And we knew we had some eggs then, you know. And he used to come down, and he used to come in the camp when he was off duty. He used to come in the camp, and he was sort of an odd job man for a day. He'd do anything. He used to come in, and he used to bring us, you know, one or some eggs in, anybody that wanted them. And he used to give them a bit of chocolate, some tea, you know, or a bit of soap, because they were real short of things like that, particularly soap. They used to love it. They could get a bit of English soap. And I don't suppose the Red Cross would have minded us really doing it, because it's really to get a bit more pulled into it, like, you know. Not that we didn't sort it, it was only a little bit that we were bartering with. And that's what used to happen. And in fact, I don't believe that he used to come and get some for the officer in charge, you know. Like, I'd be sure that he did get the sort for the officer, you know. And they used to turn a blind eye to that, and it's get an extra loaf or something like that for us, would Aldo, you know. He was really, he was very good in that respect. Yeah. There was one thing about that camp. I mentioned earlier about it being lousy in these prison camps. Well, it was the same in all camps, that, but this one in particular. I'd never seen bed bugs before. And they went to bed in this camp, in this particular hut. We had two-tier beds in there, not three-tier, two-tier wooden beds, bunks, you know. And I went to bed one night there. Whatever's happening. And now I was itching, and I couldn't, whatever's wrong, you know. And got out, and we put the lights on, and there's the blooming bed bugs. Have you ever experienced them? But of course, the things are the shoot away once the light comes, and they're going, and they're into all the crevices in these beds, any of the woodwork, you know, in these crevices. And there was things as big as your nails, you know, big white things. And the bites, God heaven, I was bitten all over with them. It was all the same, for that matter. And anyhow, in the end, we told them, that, you know, told the guard, we burnt it up, all this furniture, this wood, put it in the and burnt it all, and we slept. And so we used to sleep on the deck.
Did I get rid of them?
as far as, yeah, as far as I can remember, yes, they got rid of them. But, oh, horrible thing. God, Lord above. Bad enough with lice we used to have all the day, but nothing like as bad as those bed bugs. Yeah. And anyhow, that would be, I just don't know what date it was, Italy capitulated.
September 1943.
We're being moved from there to go back to Latrina camp. And we got set off. Then it was late evening, because by dark I was off. I got up, we stopped for a halt on this roadside, and I was off. I shot off. I had the opportunity to get away. I didn't know where I was going from. And I got to the other side of the road, it was a little field, you know. And laid low that night, stayed low that night. Sleeping there, trying to sleep with it. And then the next morning, could see a church. There was a hill, top of a hill, quite a big hill. There was a church, there was a sign of a village on the top there. And I decided to make my way up there. Now, long before I was joined by three other fellows.
What was the idea of this? What was the idea?
To get away, yeah, to try and escape, you know, to try and... We didn't know where we were hoping. We were going to get away from somewhere. We hadn't any plans, because, I mean, when you look at it in retrospect, it's really foolish to try and to do anything like that. If you're going to escape, you've got to have some sort of a plan, and you've got to have someone who's going to be able to assist you. That's how most of these... escapes were successful, by having it properly organised and someone to see you on the right way.
So you decided this because of Italy capitulating?
That's it. We thought, well, we'll get away. And we went up to this village, and I all remember we'd been met by a couple of youngsters. And they looked at us, couldn't make out who we were, you know. And I think we'd had a bit of, I don't know, we had a bit of Red Cross part, a bit of chocolate, something left with them, we offered them it. Anyhow, they went and came back with the father, padre, something like that. And with a little bit of chat, we tried, you know, we couldn't speak much Italian, and he couldn't speak a lot of English, but soon realised that they thought we were Germans at first, actually. But then they suddenly realised that we were English prisoners of war. And took us into the, I think he took us into the church first of all, if I remember rightly, or his vicarage, whatever. And then we were introduced to the remainder of the villagers. But it was only a small spot. And its name was Rapali. As far as I can remember, it was R-A-P-A-L-L-E, Rapali. And I don't suppose there's more than what... There's only a handful of people in the village, really. Proper peasants, you know, peasant people. And I shouldn't think there's been more than, I don't know, about 60 or 70 people in this village altogether. A few houses dotted here and there, and then there was hamlets dotted round about on the hillsides. Right out into the hills, then, were they? And mountains, you know, proper rough ground. And as I say, we're introduced to these, to the remainder of the villagers. And of course, they accepted it in the end. We were, you know, we were friends. See. And we were to sleep out on the night in the hills, away from the village. Wondering what we were going to do, what our next step was. We hadn't a clue to where we were going to go. And these other laddies, there were three London lads, actually, from one of the London regiment. And I was only hoping that there had been, you know, been some more, I don't know, a couple of guys or something with the ground, probably a bit better. But anyhow, we slept outside the village, you know. And we used to go around the, have a walk around, and then used to visit these different hamlets round about, you see, and they used to invite us in and give us a drink of vino. And then it got that the villagers invited us into the houses for an evening meal, so, you know. But they were all the time on edge for about the Germans coming round, you see. You could see the road from where we went up. You could see that road. Well, by that time, it was occupied by troops, you know. And we weren't a long way, from what I can gather, from Siena. We asked where the nearest place was and if there was any chance of getting anywhere, you know. And I don't think so. There's Tedesco, they called them, to the Italians. It's Tedesco, or, you know. And we spent some time there at this village, and we had there was a chap came to the village whilst we were there, and he was what they call a carbonaio, if I remember right, that's the name, his title, a carbonaio. And he was the husband of one of these women, you know. And these women in the village who used to take us in, give us a meal.
Do you mean a policeman?
No, carbonaio, he was a... No, they're carabinieri, aren't they, the police? You know, what they call a carbonaio. And he's the made carbon. Charcoal, if I can speak. They made charcoal, you see. And he was telling us about his work. And he used to go away for a few weeks at a time, making this charcoal, I should say, into the woods, the hills, you know, it's just thick with hills and mountains and background. And he used to tell us what he used to do his work, and what they did, he used to chop these. I don't know if you've ever seen them at all. I've seen this on the hill. He used to chop these tree trunk down, trees down into sections, you see. Then they used to build them. And they used to leave a hole through the centre. And they used to make like an igloo, shape of an igloo, with all these wooden logs, you know. And, the terrific size. And then they used to fire them inside, you see. And they used to make the charcoal. And then they had outlets for it, and that's how it used to go into the sold for, you know, to the towns, I would imagine. And he said, well, we were talking, you know, more or less, it's a bit dodgy to be in the village. We didn't want to be caught in the village, and we didn't, you know, and for their sake as well, if any of the Germans came round. But we was a bit away off the beaten track, you see, which... didn't attract them too much, you know. And he said, well, he'd make us, he'd take us into the hills and make us a place to sleep. And apparently it's what he used to make himself, him and his, probably a partner, he used to make himself when they went out to make this here charcoal. And he took us to, in the hills, to a suitable spot where it was nice, bit flat. And we all each had a machete. And shoveled, you know, spades and things, tools and yours. And he built, with our help, because he showed us how to do it, we built this hut to live in. All out of its trees round about, you know, not another bit of anything at all. And this is the first thing that you look for, he said, we've got two reasonably long trees with a fork in them, you see, for either end. It would be a place It'd be almost as big as this, I would think. And then it got another one to go along the top, into the dropped into these forks, you see. We dug them in so there was firm to, that for the start. And then they got lesser trees in circumference, you know, lesser trees. It was done in APEC, didn't it? Lesser trees, and then some bit lesser state. And then he got the other three small ones and wattled it through these here tree trunks, you see, all the fine stuff of the trees, and wove all that through. And then the turf round about, dug the turf up and laid it on the top of all this, upside down, you know, with the grass at the bottom, and turf the whole lot all the way around, yeah. And he even put us a bed in, raised up off the ground, you know. And that's how he used to do when they went out and making this charcoal. And as I say, he made us this hut, and we we stayed in it for quite some time. Not during the daytime, we used to go up, walk around, you see, and go visiting these different people, these farms, and the little homesteads, actually. They each had we also helped them with a grape harvest, you know. Most of them had the houses, they had a little stable underneath for oxen, you know, and a cart. And they had big butts in there, a couple of butts for their own wine, you see. And we used to go around with them onto these vineyards and collecting the grapes. We used to give them a pair of secateurs, and we used to go around and we had a basket, we used to pop them in the basket, and with all the family, like, you know, there were two or three of them. And then we'd take them and drop them into this. They'd have a couple of oxen pulling this cart with a big barrel on. And used to drop them into the barrel, and then one of the guys had a big posher. They used to posh the grapes, squeeze them, don't you? And then it's true what they say, they used to jump into them and trample them in with the feet. Yeah. And then it was taken to their homes and put into these here like cellars or whatever, like a stable underneath the living quarters. You used to go upstairs to the house, live upstairs, you see. You had a stable underneath with the cattle, and the sheep, and the pig or whatever, and dogs. And you used to leave it in there to ferment the wine, you know, till such time as it was ready for for drinking, yeah. And and as I say, that's what one of the pastimes that we did. We was all the time waiting for, was one chap who was supposed to be going to find out just where, when we were able to get out then, but there was no chance. The country was too, you weren't familiar with the countryside, and it could be very, very dangerous out there. It's no good if you want to be knowing where you're going. So as I say, we never did attempt to get any further. In fact, I was taken ill it would be the back end of that year of 43, and they took me into one of the houses and nursed me back to good health, these late women.
What was wrong with
them? I think I had a bit of, I thought I'd got bronchitis or something like that. I thought whether I had a bit of pneumonia maybe. And I got a doctor to me. The doctor came up on horseback.